Today on Straight Talk Africa, a report card on women empowerment in Africa. Some observers say while there is reason to celebrate women in leadership positions on the continent, more needs to be done. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, March 30th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello, it's good to be with you today. And to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere, I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter, filling in for Mariama Diallo.
Today, we'll celebrate and talk about the empowerment of women in Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, you, our audience, have weighed in on our topic throughout your emails and Facebook comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
March is the month when women all over the world celebrate International Women's Day and also participate in conferences to discuss issues that affect them. My colleague Esther Gizu-Yuwat has more.
The 60th session of the Commission on the Status of Women in New York ended last week with a special focus on women's empowerment and sustainable development. Many women in developing countries continue to face significant challenges. In Africa, fewer girls than boys attend school. Few women earn the same salary as their male counterparts in similar positions. Speaking during a similar conference last year, UN Women Executive Director Pumzile Mlambo Nkuka spoke about cultural barriers in a patriarchal society that hinder women's advancement.
Governments amended constitution, passed good laws, but because we have not transformed society, we have not removed the pillars of patriarchy, we are transforming within a patriarchal society, we're not moving as fast as we need to.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton addressing last year's Commission on the Status of Women.
Despite the obstacles that remain, there's never been a better time in history to be born female. A girl born in Lesotho 20 years ago could not hope to one day own property or sign a contract. Today she can.
Women and girls in parts of Africa where there has been political strife bear the brunt of the violence. In countries like Burundi, South Sudan, and Somalia, women have faced extreme hardship. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also spoke during the same conference.
Removing the barriers that keep women and girls on the margins of economic, social, cultural, and political life must be a top priority for us all, businesses, governments, United Nations, and civil society.
But all is not doom and gloom in the continent. In several countries, women are making progress and improving their societies. Namibia's former First Lady, Penehupifo Pohamba, urged African governments to implement policies that champion the rights of women during a conference on women empowerment.
In Namibia, empowerment of women and girls is a constitutional right. The government developed a policy framework centering on economic empowerment for all. The framework aims at enhancing entrepreneurship among previously disadvantaged persons and concentrate on assisting women, youth, and persons with disability.
The theme for this year's International Women's Day focuses on gender parity. Few women in developing countries own property or businesses, yet most continue to bear the family burden to provide food and shelter. Most have no access to health care. During last year's conference on the status of women, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton spoke about the progress women have made in the last 20 years.
A girl born 20 years ago in Rwanda grew up in the shadow of genocide and rape. Today, she can be proud that women have led the way out of that dark time, and now there are more women serving in her country's parliament than anywhere else in the world.
In spite of the seemingly uphill battle to achieve gender equality, some of the continent's women have made it to top positions, among them Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and the African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Esther Githu-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Esther, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Haramin Zosongbo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Karine Kaneza, member of the Burundian Women and Girls for Peace and Security in Burundi. I have to say that, ladies, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa once again.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
It's a pleasure.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Haramin. What does Women's Day mean to you, really? In very simple terms, what does it mean to you?
Really, I mean, honestly, Women's Day does not mean anything special to me, mm-hmm. because I believe that every day is Women's Day due to all the work that women have been doing, all the contribution, social, economic, political contribution that women have been doing in terms of rearing children and educating children. All that they've been making on the continent and elsewhere, I believe that every day should be a day of praise for women.
What about you, Karine? Why should we, in fact, be celebrating this great Women's Day?
I agree with my sister when she says that every day should be a Women's Day. At the same time, I think Women's Day, coming from a country like Burundi, which is going through a crisis and where on a daily basis, women are struggling with coming to terms to what's going on in our country. We have women who have been, you know, who have been raped, who are fleeing our country, who live in refugee camps. I think for me, it's a day where every woman and every man stand in solidarity and reflect a little bit on the lives and contributions at the same time of women in general.
Do they really do so?
Hopefully they do. I did. I hope you did.
Okay. Someone might say that what you are probably saying reflects perhaps the concerns of the elite women. Mm. What about the ordinary African woman, the type of woman that I used to see in Kabare very early in the morning, carrying a hoe, a child on her back, going to dig? What does such a day really mean for her?
And sometimes on a bicycle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The thing is, I think we live in a global world where some terminologies have been used maybe in a misguided fashion. I was making a comment just before the show about the word empowerment, mm-hmm. and I'm personally uncomfortable with that because it carries this. It conveys a meaning of giving power mm-hmm. back to a group of people who mm-hmm. are powerless. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely wrong. And that brings me back to what you're saying. Women as powerful leaders and role models have always been there. They've shaped the humanity as we know it today. I'm standing here because my grandmother gave me the values and an attitude and a worldview that allowed me to go and find myself in different parts of the world and being exposed, thanks to my grandmother. When you talk about local women, I grew up every year we would go and sit with my grandmother, who was a leader in her own community, and I will never forget things she would say in terms of, you know, how do you raise a child and how do you posture yourself. What's your posture in society? What kind of values do you need to bring on the table when you're talking to really the world as we know it today. So it's a challenge for, I think, women today to grasp, especially African women. I'm talking about African women who live in a Western world, but who were actually shaped. We've been shaped by African traditional values. It's not an easy task, but at the same time, it brings it some richness.
And I would like to add the fact that, you know, women in the local areas, women in the rural villages, you know, they have this power embedded within them. And as you were talking about empowerment, that it's really important to celebrate, but celebrate it all that in just one day. That's why I was saying earlier that, you know, it doesn't really make a big sense. Yes, it's good to bring out all the work that they have done, you know, the power that they have shown or that they continue to show. But in the meantime, are we going to, you know, put it there and you know, are we going to just ignore that part of society? So I think the discussion is really important around those women, because the women like you and I, we are today in a developed world. Women in the urban areas in Africa, they are making their way also through everything. The one in the rural areas, they have this power, but they're still lagging behind.
It's very interesting that you both say what you have said. And I have to add, frankly, that when my grandmother, Sarah, was alive, I would go to visit Kabale, and I would find myself literally going on my knees to greet my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could never do that to my grandfather, nor could I do it to my father. Mm-hmm. What makes women tick, really?
Well, you see that a lot of it is just the respect that we pay for elderly people in Africa, in our African communities in general. Mm-hmm. The elderly person or anybody who is older than you, not just elderly people, but anybody who is older than you hold a high importance and value in front of you. And in most of the communities, people don't address their brothers and their sisters by their name. And don't even talk about your grandparents, because these are people who are our libraries, because they have all the oral tradition, they have the oral values. And it's true that they didn't have the chance to have a written written note of all this knowledge and experience and everything that they have. But in order for you to acquire that knowledge, you still have to go to those people. And that's why they are so well respected. And again, when we go back to later in history, we know that the colonizers are the one who changed women's role in African society. One of the legacies that they left, among other things, is the change of the status of women, is imposing upon African people a male-dominated society. That did not exist before. Women were playing a great role. They were rulers. They were priestesses. They were the one that people will use through those women that people connect through the spiritual well-beings. Those women were very powerful, and they hold a great respect. And that's why we still see our grandmothers, or we have had that kind of respect toward our grandparents.
And some of those women, by the way, came from a country which was known as Dahomey, which incidentally currently happens to be, guess where?
In Benin.
Benin, where you come from.
That's true.
The Amazon.
And that's why I usually say, you know what? For every woman should be an Amazon.
Yes.
Because the Amazon are the most important group of women in history.
You would explain Defenders a little bit fighters. Further about the Amazon when we come from a break. Now we will pause for a short break. And we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka. and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Women Empowerment. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And this is, of course, Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Haramine. Earlier, of course, you talked about the great Amazon ladies who hailed from present-day Benin. What kind of women were those, really? What made them especially tick?
Well, they were special in a way that they were very, very strong women. Mm-hmm. Very powerful women.
In what sense?
Fearless women.
Generals.
All that's quite possible. Mm-hmm. When you see Amazon come, you have to buy down or you have to get out of the way. Because they have shown so much courage and bravery that the king has appointed them to become first, they were first the bodyguard of the king, mm-hmm. and then later they were sent, they were the first women warriors.
Bodyguard of the king?
Yeah.
Maybe that is in fact where the late brother leader, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, borrowed the leaf from, because later in his days, guess who were his bodyguards?
Women.
Yes.
But in not the same way, because there are other things going on. But these women were just there committed for the kingdom of Dahomey. They were committed to fight the colonizer by all means possible, to the point where, you know, they have a different regiment of Amazon women. Mm-hmm. And different grades, just like we will have soldiers today, you know, with different grades of soldiers.
Right.
That's what we have before. Some of them, in order to be able to fight, will just, I wouldn't say, but, you know, it's just to say that these women have shown a lot of strength and a lot of courage over the years. It is unfortunate that this group of women does not exist anymore. But my hope is that every woman, which we do, because whenever we see a woman rising and fighting for their country, for their rights, for human rights, and so forth, we call that women an Amazon.
Amazon.
That's what they have been in the past. And my call is for every single woman to be an Amazon.
They also had another characteristic. They practiced what was known as polyandry, the opposite of polygamy. Mm. True?
Well, the Benin Amazon were not practicing polyandry, because we live in a society where it's a completely patriarchal society. The shift came when one of the king died. And his twin sister became a queen. And that's when they created the Amazon group. And that was back in the 18th century, back 18th centuries. But then later on, the group becomes really strong. And actually, in order to be a good Amazon, you were not supposed to be married. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Yeah, you were not supposed to be married. Mm. So
just like priests, like Catholic priests.
Yeah, I mean, because in order for them to go in the front and then fight for a whole kingdom, an entire kingdom, you know, they need to focus.
And not that's to be distracted.
So they need to sacrifice.
They need to sacrifice, exactly, and be focused and do the work to have a well-done job.
Very interesting.
Just wanted to add something very quickly. The Amazon spirit you just said, you just mentioned, I think there's a common thread. That's what I was thinking while she was talking. There's a common thread throughout humanity in terms of you have the Amazons of Benin, of the Kingdom of Dahomey, and then, but over years, by the way, in Burundi, we also had a very famous mother, you know, queen mother called Ririko Mutima, you know, who actually led the kingdom.
And where did she come from? Was she a Muganwa?
She's Burundian.
A Tutsi? Or what was she?
She was part of a clan from which women were married to the Baganwa. Mm-hmm. We had different clans, so she didn't have to be necessarily a Muganwa. But nevertheless, she was very prominent in a very important chapter in our history. And we also have Ina Mujandi, who was a woman rebel who actually waged a war against the king and the colonizers. But anyway, but later on in life, let's remember, I grew up being very much influenced by what I read about women like Adelaide Tambo, Albertina Sisulu. So Miriam Makeba, Wangari Maathai in Kenya. So you have writers like Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. You have poets. I mean, now I remember Katie Nijabandi, who was a very important voice in the struggle in Burundi these days. And then, so you have a whole variety of voices, female voices, who've been really around us all these years. Mm. And going back to what you were saying, empowerment, I think empowerment, what is it? It's really to recognize what we've always had, what we've always seen, sometimes ignoring it, but it's always been there. I'm a member, as you said, of a women and girls movement. I think of the president, Marie-Louise Wadichako. She's a fantastic, fantastic leader. We trace the movement as a group, as a think tank, as a group. We trace our roots back to, for instance, the March of Women for Peace in Burundi in 2014. We had 3,000 women in the streets of Bujumbura. In 1996, we had the women who went to see President Museveni asking for the embargo to be lifted up. So we have a very rich history which sometimes goes ignored
and
left on the side.
Because people usually, why do you think, you know, the reason why I think that it goes that is ignored is because people trace it so far back. People tend to forget history, especially when it suits them, when it goes in their favor. Because today, you will see men who will say, you know, you need to behave like our grandmothers, or you need to be a submissive women. You need to be this and that. But that was not the case before.
That was not
you
the
know,
case.
And they're talking about
politics.
Equality and all those today.
Yes.
Because, you know, it suits them, it works for their agenda. But in the past, that was not the case. Yes,
well,
because
the
history is far from, it's really difficult for people to trace history back. And that's something we need to do, actually.
Absolutely.
We need to do.
It's good, of course.
I totally agree with you.
It's good to celebrate and to talk about the great things that women in the past have accomplished. But what about today's woman? She's held back, obviously, by certain factors.
Yes.
Some of them are what? Culture?
You would say that culture is the first barrier. I think man-made conflicts is another one. Attitudes, social attitudes, which don't have anything to do necessarily with culture sometimes. But at the same time, I would say that
I want to add. You say, you know, the behavior is one. Behavior is one aspect of it.
Yes.
The social perception that people have on women, on women, is one thing. And then, of course, we have all the cultural values, as you just mentioned, the norms that they're expecting women to have, the customs, they expect women to you know, the behavior they expect from women, the expectation
attitude,
in general, the attitudes,
mindsets.
Exactly, the mindset.
So
is
maybe,
the attitude.
In fact, what is needed is fundamental changes in both men's and women's attitudes and mindsets, really.
Oh yes, because we see that a lot of the issue today is not just men issue. It's not, you know, if women are lagging behind, it's not because of men, but it's also because of women, and that's an issue we need to address.
Education. When choices are being made, for example, in a family, you more often see that it favors the boy child, mm-hmm. not the girl child. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing is, I believe, depending on where you are, if it's in a village setting, I would argue that this trend is changing, slowly changing. You have universal education in most African countries now, which has obviously a direct impact in terms of girls' educational enrollment.
Universal education? Mm-hmm. Are you serious?
Free education, what they call the free education.
Well, I've heard about universal, for example, primary or secondary education in countries like Uganda, my friend, but when you look at those places, there's no education there.
No, I'm not talking about the quality of education, but I'm talking about the state stating that every kid, girl or boy, can go to school, which was not there before.
They state it. They talk the talk.
Yes. And that's the difference between what is written in constitution and what is happens in reality.
Precisely.
But I do believe, and you see it on the ground, that we're talking about the family. That has a certain impact on the family.
Right.
Of course, on the state side, there's a lot of there are a lot of things that need to be done. Strengthening of the institutions and some transparency. And I mean, the reason why education is not really being implemented the way it's being stated, it's because the infrastructure is not there. We all know that, because there's a rampant corruption. There's no emphasis on the education. But on the family side, the fact that your governor or the local leader will come in front of a community and say, people, you are encouraged to send your kids to school, it's going to be very different from the times of my mother, for instance, was actually told, you can't go to school. She had to run away from home. My mom went to school.
We have to recognize that there have been
You can't go to school because you are a girl.
Exactly.
Yes.
That was
in 1960s.
You do not need education.
You need to be married.
Your house is your place is in the house.
You will not use it. You will not use your education.
You will not use it. Or you will not get married. You will not find a husband.
Let's also say that is not only in Africa, that in Europe, in the Western world, it was also like that. I always have this argument that it's an evolution.
Most of the African, nowadays African cultures from? Because they come from the European world, because they have been colonized by the European people, and because of that, they bought a lot of the European cultural
values.
The
stratification of the society.
Yeah, exactly.
A very superficial stratification the ladder. So you always have someone who's on top of you.
Yeah.
That's what we got from the colonizers, for sure.
But what about the selfish interests of the vanguards of society, culture, the men? Without colonialism, the men themselves on the ground in Africa. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of change that is inclusive in their interest? Do they see it that way?
Let me get to your question, Ryan. Whether they see women as allies, as partners today?
It depends.
Yeah.
Because it depends on the
area. Let me give you a practical example. Let's talk about the UN Resolution 1325, which asks, which really recommends and requests a greater representation and participation of women in peace negotiations. Now, you look at 1990, between 1990 and 2000, you had 11% of peace negotiations which made direct references to women.
But
between 2000 and 2014, 27%. Mm-hmm.
some progress.
Today, 2014, out of the six major peace negotiations we've had in the world, really, a good 67% of those accords made reference to women.
Some progress.
But then, that's where the but comes. Only 9% of women are part of the negotiation teams, are negotiators.
Interesting.
So they will be at the table. We will have the numbers, but those who will be
have no opinion.
Really having protocols and issues to debate on will be very minimum.
Yes,
so you have that.
I get you. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. You're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from you, our audience, through social media. But now, here's our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who responded to our question of the week. Our letter of the week comes from Martin Nyalusi from Tanzania. He writes, Kenya's Wangari Maathai showed a way for women and men to empower themselves through her war on conserving environments. Through her work, she made sure that the world was a better place. In Swahili, let us call her Mama Wa Africa, or Mama Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter. Take it away again, Ayen.
Thanks again, Shaka. We got tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. As Women's History Month is drawing to a close, U.S. President Barack Obama says we must remember the trailblazers of the past, including the women who are not recorded in our history books. We honor their legacies by carrying forward the valuable lessons learned from the powerful examples they have set. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, which African women do you feel have empowered Africa, and why? Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using all of our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Women Empowerment. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who says African women who've empowered Africa are Winnie Mandela, Miriam Makeba, Ellen Johnson, and Joyce Banda. And well, Shaka, those are certainly an incredible group of women. Your take on that?
Very interesting. You want to go for that, Haramein? Go for it, please.
Yes. As I was saying earlier, you know, I strongly believe that the number of women that they mentioned that have influenced the continent, but we don't forget also the one who were unspoken of, the one we never heard of. And I mentioned earlier the Amazon women. And most of the time I say people don't talk a lot about the Amazon women because it's probably, Benin is probably a Francophone country, and that's why we don't hear a lot about it around here. But they have played a great role. Great, wonderful. And we have Wangari Maathai, and I have had the opportunity to work with her on a project related to environment, and I was really pleased with the work that she was doing. And
you may be interested to learn that she appeared on this very program not once, not twice, but three times.
Oh, three times. Lucky you. Lucky you. She is a trailblazer. She set up a great example for women to just go to fight for the right thing. For the right and for the right thing.
Very interesting. Ayen?
Thanks again, Chaka. And thank you for using our social media platform to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan, Quikariza Michael, who writes, "All African women who gave birth to the revolutionaries of Africa." Chaka, it's really hard to disagree with that. What's your take?
Very interesting. What about that, Karine?
I couldn't agree more. I think Africa, we always see our continent in different perspectives. I think for me, right now, I see Africa going through another revolutionary struggle from the times of colonization. And I cannot, and my heart goes out to, and I'm more, I think, sensitive to those mothers who are not heard, who are not seen, those who have given birth to these men and women. I mean, when you look at the types of conflict we have, we now have women who are fighters in the likes of the Amazons, sometimes for the wrong for the wrong wars or the wrong causes, but sometimes it's for the, you know, there might be causes out there which they aspire to carry forward. Mm-hmm. So I think of their mothers. We talk about Oliver Tambo, and you think of Steve Biko, and you think of their mothers. Mm. You think of Nelson Mandela, and you think of his mother. All these, you know, powerful figures on the African continent, whose characters were very much influenced, and they themselves have testified on that.
Very interesting. Any more reaction from our audience, Ayen?
Yes, we certainly have more reaction. Let's go to another comment from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan, Abba Musa Yao from Nigeria, who writes, "Nigeria has many women that have made us proud, but I suggest Anikepo Akande, president of the Lagos Chamber of Commerce." And our last Facebook comment comes from Tumusime Rogers from Kabale, Uganda, who writes, "Winnie Byanyima, the wife of Ugandan opposition leader Kizzy Besigye, she is the executive director of Oxfam International, an engineer, a politician, and a diplomat. She foresees what is best for many people's lives." Chaka, back to you.
Very interesting, because in fact, that Facebook comment comes from the little town where he was truly was born and comes from, Kabare, southwestern Uganda.
Huh, interesting.
Interesting.
How do you respond to that Winnie Byanyima lady? Incredible.
You know, I do not read a lot, really, about this person. You might tell me more about it, but...
Karine will probably be the right person to talk about her.
No, she's a fantastic leader. I had the pleasure, the honor to meet with her once, many years ago. And she just has this aura, this presence, which cannot be ignored. She fought long and hard throughout her life. She started, I think she was among the very few women who were involved in the liberation struggle and rose in the ladder. And here she is, director of an organization like Oxfam. It's a fantastic journey. And I think she's a very inspirational figure.
I can tell you that when I had the privilege of being one of the co-moderators of the Ugandan presidential debate, the Ugandan capital, Kampala, on February 13th, she came in wearing a very beautiful African dress, coming to attend the debate. And of course, her husband was on the podium, mm-hmm. one of the presidential candidates, Dr. Chiza Besigye. And the whole international conference center, my friend, rose up and started cheering, as if, in fact, they were looking at the next first lady. There she was.
Well, food for thought.
Thanks, Ayen, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Thank you, Shaka. It's been a pleasure. And that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in a social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are new, and if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Tune in to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on our mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of development partners in promoting democracy and good governance in Africa. Join host Shaka Sali and his panel of guests as they talk about democracy partnership. That's next week on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back. Today we are celebrating and talking about the empowerment of women in Africa. Our distinguished guests are Harmeen Zosongbo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Karine Kaneza, member of the Burundian Women and Girls for Peace and Security in Burundi. Well, ladies, again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and extremely, extremely gratified to have the opportunity to host you one more time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome.
It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Now, what do you think, frankly, needs to be done in order to make sure that today's girl child is basically viewed as, her brother?
There's something I would like to say, which I think set a precedent last week. It's the sentencing of Jean-Pierre Bemba
For rape.
For rape.
Mm-hmm. In Central African Republic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of the case of Jean-Paul Akayesu in 2000.
The 1994 genocide.
The 1994 genocide in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And I think at the core issue when one looks at the concept of women's empowerment, it's really the respect. It's really respecting, bringing our respect to what is sacred. The issue of rape, when I think of the legal, the jurisprudence that has been said by these cases, I have to hope that in a near future, we will have a culture, this culture of impunity being reversed slowly. And that would hopefully start a process whereby girls and women in general, whether it's in the framework of a conflict or not, start to be respected. Mm. It's unfortunate that we start to look at the worst case of dehumanization, starting there, and then walk our way to a very decent request of, can I go to school? Because if that is possible, if that is permissible, then everything else will be permissible. I don't know if you get my argument.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you because, in the first thing that is important in this whole issue is the respect that people, and if you respect the girl, you respect the girl the same way you give respect to the boy, we wouldn't end to where we are today talking about gender inequality. Mm-hmm. Because they are just basic rights for women or girls to be protected, to not be victim of violence. Mm-hmm. It's true that a lot of the African constitution have a provision for guarantee the right for girls and women. Mm. But what are the specific plan that they have to make that happen?
It doesn't exist.
The implementation of it. And a group like African Views is put something to call, together called AVAWA, is African Violence, sorry, Anti-Violence Against Women, Mm-hmm. And that is making a call also for African government and the different international organization to take that seriously, to call on the African government so that they have a step-by-step point that shows how they're going to implement all these things that all these rights that are stated in constitution, but while in fact they're not being implemented in different areas in Africa.
Luckily, of course, we are beginning to see some fundamental progress, really.
Correct.
Yeah. Because in some countries like Ghana, for example, you do have a woman chief justice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you have many lawyers, including our own Karine Kaneza right here.
Yeah.
That's true.
Huh? Mm-hmm. We have women ministers.
Oh, yes. We have a lot of powerful
women. Women presidents.
Yeah. Women presidents.
We have Africa is the number one when it comes to that. You know, we have had 4 women so far. The U.S., none yet, right?
But you see, there is a saying that you find sometimes people with titles, with positions, but with no authority.
That is true. You want to elaborate on that?
I was going to say, and maybe it will talk a little bit on what you just said, Shaka. I think fundamentally we need to transform our societies, and we are in an era of transformation. You see it through the changes that are happening throughout the continent, really, in terms of people claiming their God-given rights, really, to be true and vibrant participants in the making of their societies and their government. You see that, we feel it, and amongst those citizens, you have a great representation of women. Again, I go back to what I said in Burundi, women went, they went on the streets. Women have been really at the forefront of many struggles.
But I believe
but
that, you
need,
know,
there is this,
there is
but
this, we need, there are reserves, yeah, when it comes to that. Because the struggle is happening somewhere else. They're showing.
We need results. But if you don't mind, ladies, let me go to the lifeline of the show and bring in some callers from the continent. Good evening, Agre from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Agre, can you hear me?
Yes, Shaka, can you hear?
Yes, please. What is your question, Agre?
Well, my question is, Shaka, just try to ask about the women. What are they doing exactly to empower the women who are exactly living at the villages?
What are they?
Hello, Shaka?
Hello?
What are they really doing to empower the women who are living and stay at the villages? Because it's happened that most of the time they're doing is benefit themselves to the women who are staying in town.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to the other side of the continent, Liberia. Good evening, Abdul from Liberia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka Spirit. My name is Abdullahi, calling from Liberia this evening. I have a serious issue with our president, who happened to be the first female president in Africa. It is embarrassing to have a female president within a country where you have more women who are working within government, but they fail to empower girls within our country. The far majority of our young sisters in Liberia, they are living on prostitution. And for us, we don't think it should be that way. Looking at a country who was the first to produce a female president in Africa, and record, I don't think it is the right direction that we should be going in. So I think it is now time that her international partners see reason to come in to see how best they can help us to combat these type of ills within our society, because if I'm in jeopardy, young people, all the time they push the issue of women should be in power. Yes, we all know that when women are in power in society, they will encourage more people to say, oh yes, that far away to go to school and to acquire education so that tomorrow we cannot be liberated to men. But if I'm in Liberia, my gender, our sisters, they are not going to school only because the people who should be helping them out, they are not helping them out.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know exactly whether I got him, but can we answer the first question from Tanzania, which in fact asks you, if you remember correctly, what are you doing to empower the women in the villages?
Is the question being addressed to me specifically?
Not you, but to the panelists.
Oh, okay. Well, I will say personally, I have been doing a lot when it comes to girls and women issues. For many years, I work with my dad's orphanage, which is in Benin, to ensure that women protect the children against infanticide. And infanticide is this ritual where a woman who deliver a baby breech, meaning that the baby had the feet first, they believe that is a bad luck for the family and they have to kill the baby.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And a woman or kids who start having the teeth first, they believe that is an evil. Or a kid whose mother died during childbirth is a bad luck for the whole tribe. They will leave that kid in the bush until the kid dies. And so since 19...
That is a practice that
It hasn't started in Benin. According to my research, this is something that's been going far beyond the Roman Empire, going that far.
Have you heard about in your neighborhood?
No. It is going on, and it's still the orphanage is still there and has about 32 kids in it. And these are all kids who have been saved from infanticide. Mm. So since the 90s, you know, as a teenager, we've been working hard, not only protecting the children, but also lately working with women in those areas to stand up against child abuse, stand against the protection of the children against such practice. And lately, also, I have been working closely with women to educate them, to give them sexuality education for sexual transmitted diseases that they're not aware of, that we in the Western culture, we know about, but those women have no idea about. So a lot of the work that I'm doing now, empowering women and girls, whether they are in the rural area, in the urban area, or even in the diaspora, is regarding sexuality education for women. Because a woman who cannot stand and talk for herself, talk about her body, is going to be difficult for such women to be a leader and stand in front of people and raise her voice and talk about her own rights.
Very interesting. What about the question from Liberia? I don't know whether you got it very well.
No, I didn't. I was actually going to answer the first question myself.
But I think yes, you may have in fact a female president.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, nothing has trickled down.
Yes.
And in fact, he has a point, because when I was a kid, growing up in a primary school in Kabale, southwestern Uganda, I remember one of the few countries that had a female president was a country called Ceylon, which is currently called as Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. It had a president, Bandaranaike. But when you look at the status of women in Sri Lanka today, nothing much has changed. Mm-hmm. If you looked at Pakistan, for example, when Benazir Bhutto was prime minister, the daughter, of course, of Bhutto himself.
Mm.
Nothing much has changed in terms of the status of women, frankly, in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So having a female president does not necessarily really translate into gains by women, even though, of course, she serves as a positive role model.
Yeah, I think there are two issues here. The first one is every woman who's in a position of power, let's say, will be operating within a gentleman's club.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. My question would be, I wonder if there were 10 women president, whether there would not be change.
And if, because in fact, that probably that environment, that society,
exactly,
were to be democratic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. And the other issue is, I think we're also victims of a gap between our African society, our countries as they are, mm-hmm, as weak as they are, and positions which have been framed and conceived within a Western mindset. What I want to say is, if you go, for instance, within our movement, and I personally, when I was working in Burundi, we would go to the ground, we would go to the communities, to the local, at the local level, and you would see that things which were happening in 1980 are different now. Give you a very practical example. Mm. Women will be, they now know that, for instance, they can inherit. They might not get the inheritance everywhere, but some women do, at the village level.
The laws have been put in place.
The laws have not been put in place, and that is the...
But that is what is needed.
But that is the legal fight we have to do. But at the same time, at the local level, you do have some sort of a change of mentality, mm, due to the leadership that has been exerted by women themselves in their own communities, in their own families.
I agree. And what you,
what we see, we might see the Ellen Johnson, and we might see the Winnie Byanyima, but we are not seeing the Charlotte, the Jacqueline, the Karines. I'm saying, you know, these other women on the ground who are actually working silently and tirelessly for the change to happen, and that is why.
But I thought I thought that from everything I've heard, that we should be able to see that in a country like Rwanda.
And I'm not sure if we don't see it.
What do we see there? I hear you obviously have the largest number of members of parliament.
Mm-hmm.
These are not elected by their people, mind you. These are appointed by a president, Paul Kagame.
So are we talking about the ways in which they are elected, or are we talking about the change that they are effected?
Who do they owe allegiance to? Do they owe allegiance to their people, to the women, or to the appointing authority?
Mm-hmm. I think that parliamentarians in Rwanda, I would be very surprised if they are not elected by their own communities, their own localities.
My friend, you go back and do your homework.
You know, it all goes about this idea of Beijing.
Unfortunately, you
95,
see,
talking about
time
a quota
happens to be our best ally. Time is not our best ally. I have to go.
Okay.
On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Armin Zosongbo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Karine Kaneza, member of the Burundian Women and Girls for Peace and Security in Burundi. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.